Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, January 20th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, an active day in the markets, and we'll go over the closing prices here briefly. We will discuss it during the second and third segments today, as Wendy Wilson will be joining us here momentarily. So let's get right to the prices for gold today. Gold had a nice day off its highs of about $4, $5, up $17.50 for gold. Well, let me redo that. $14.60 at $11.03, off its high of $11.11. You have silver up 15 today at 14.27. Pressure on platinum down 3 at 826. Palladium is holding at 497. And both of them are off their lows of the day. Gold and silver off their highs, and platinum and palladium off their lows. The USDX today, that is off its low today, down only 0.01 right now at 99.12. Crude oil took another beating today, down 1.91 at 26.76. No doubt about it, we're definitely going to see $20. So the pressure is on. And the stock markets today, they had a nice reversal the last hour of trade. It was down earlier in the day, 500 points, over 500 points. And plunge protection team managed to reverse it to only 250 points. Down 250 for the Dow, 1.56%, 15,766. The NASDAQ was down over 100 points, now down 5 at 44.71. S&P barely unchanged, 1859, down 1%, down 22 points. The 10-year yield broke through the 2%, 1.98% for the yield on the 10-year, down 0.05. The euro was still holding at 109, but a little bit of pressure, 0.20. European Asian markets, they just got creamed. Germany fared better than most. It was down just slightly under 3%. Hong Kong was down almost 4%, Japan was down almost 4%, and London was down 3.5%. So it's I ponder how the U.S. is able to escape the market wrath, but we'll talk about this again after the break. First, I'd like to welcome Wendy Wilson to the program from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Hello, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
Yes.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
We got you.
Okay. I thought we'd talk about tonics. There's a little history to herbal tonics that a lot of us may not know about. American settlers use them, and so do people in many cultures all over the world. Because every culture seems to have invented its own medicinal tonic. And the tonic ingredients they selected was an assortment of plants and herbs. So whoever said that the golden age of herbalism was from the 1400s to the 1600s, pretty much mistaken, because Germany and France never lost sight of their herbal healing roots. So in a lot of cases, the tonics had a lot of powerful herbs that had adaptogen action. So the herbs selected contained these compounds that could read the chemical markers in the human system and adapt to the need the human had. So it adapted to the receptors necessary to fulfill an action. So it's really important to understand about that, because herbs can help stabilize the human condition that way. So the concept of the adaptogens in these plants was supposedly first used by a pharmacologist involved in drug trials in 1947. They were hoping to understand the adaptogen capabilities better so that could help them find a solution to how pathogens are miraculously becoming resistant to antibiotics. So most of the research on your adaptogen herbs has been really carried out in Russia, Korea, and China. And more study needs to be done in order to satisfy the FDA's definition of cure, treat, or prevent disease using your herbal tonics. Now, scientists, what they do know is whatever the mechanism is within the herbs, it tends to decrease the cellular stress on the human body. And research is showing that ginseng has that ability, as well as some other herbs. And here's the scientific medical definition of adaptogens in non-specific remedies. They say adaptogens increase resistance to a broad spectrum of harmful factors or stressors of different physical, chemical, and biological natures. Adaptogens are also a new class of metabolic regulators of a natural origin, which increase the ability of an organism to adapt to environmental factors and avoid damage from other factors. End of quote. That comes from the Phytomedicine 1999 journal by Patterson, Wolkman, and Wagner. Now, Al, Melody, the Russians have conducted far more research on plant adaptogens and tonics than any other country on the planet. 1,500 pharmacological and clinical published studies. And there are a few products today that state they have adaptogen benefit. In 1998, the FDA and the European Medicine Agency conceded to approve a monograph for Siberian ginseng root as an adaptogen. So modern science and medicine are, having a little difficulty rationalizing the adaptogen mechanism in natural medicine sources. Well, do you know why tonics became popular? Do you guys got a guess for me?
Yes, it was the invention of gin.
Well, not all tonics had alcohol in them, Al. Actually, they started out in a vinegar base, okay, because vinegar is a really good catalyst for pulling out all the nutrition from plants. So the herb tonics had a very common use. They were taken in the spring after a long winter. So spring tonics were a necessity to help refortify the body with nutrition that was missing throughout the winter. So before the 20th century, the human diet during the winter usually consisted of dried meat, some grains, and root vegetables. It was later on that we discovered that vegetables quickly lose a lot of their vitamins and minerals after they're harvested. So the herb tonics were often contained a lot of herbs that are high in these nutrients like calcium and iron and vitamin C. Now, the added benefit to the tonics was that it often cleansed the system while supplying the needed nutrients. So herbs like nettle and red clover that you'd find in your tonics help to sweep the blood system and detoxify it. Herbs like parsley or lobelia would act like diuretics to flush and tone the kidneys. And guess who else loved their tonics? It was the monks. Oh, the Asian monks. The monks love their tonics. They sustain themselves on them. They claim that herb tonics take you from disease prevention to optimum health. So the monks are the first to tell you that Western medicine focuses on disease prevention, while their Eastern philosophy to health focuses on longevity, vitality, rejuvenation, you know, working with the energy of the body and the physical and the spiritual level. So the Asian monks, they typically love their American ginseng and their astragalus root in their tonics because they both offer that adaptogen quality. And the ginseng is well known as a panax herb, P-A-N-A-X, which means a panacea type of herb because it has so many benefits. The saponins that are in the ginseng really are great at helping the body with many illnesses on different levels and offers a lot of energy or stamina to the body. So the Asians, they typically understand this. And they also like astragalus root because of the immune system support that it gives. And it also helps to export toxins out of the body really quickly, neutralizes and out. So they like that part. So
It could
be any kind of thing from, things you breathe in, chemicals, pollution, pharmaceutical residues,
heavy metals,
radiation, okay. Radiation, and they know about that over there in Asian continent now, but, they just liked them because it energized them basically. It offered them stamina and it reduced their fatigue. And it did that on a cellular level. And guess what? Patients that are taking radiation treatment for chemotherapy for cancer, if they use astragalus root, it reduces the negative side effects from the cancer treatments by modern medicine and also helps them recover much faster. And that research was done by Anderson Cancer Research Center at the University of Houston, Texas. So they know that here's another benefit of astragalus root they discovered when they were doing that research. It helps sperm mobility. So it's a male fertility solution as well. So monks will say tonics give you radiant health, and that's what they swear by that. So, yeah, long history. And
when
when
you were talking about adaptogens at the beginning of earlier in the program,
yeah,
I understood you to say that the adaptogens would essentially do whatever your body needed to have done. And you take the same, you implied, didn't say this, that you could take a tonic, I could take a tonic, and I might get a completely different set of benefits out of it as compared to what you do.
Right.
Now, did I misunderstand you?
No, you're actually correct, because a lot of, depending on the herbs you have in your tonic, the ones that have that adaptogen kind of personality to them, what they do is they read your chemical need, and then they will attach themselves to that receptor. And so whatever nutrient they have in the herb that will match that receptor, that's what you're going to get. So it's what herbalists, fondly call the thinking herb, kind of knows what you need. It just provides it. That's the best way. There's probably all kinds of scientific definitions for this on a cellular level, but basically, most people understand the adaptogen concept.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, it's pretty amazing that it would work a different way on different people. I mean, that's got to interfere with testing, doesn't it?
Well, it's got to interfere.
I mean, you take 100 people, they have 100 different problems, and you test all of them with the same substance, and if anyone is testing this stuff, it's got to be challenging.
Well, and it's the same, too, in medicine. Like, some people, need more pain medicine, though. There's more anesthesia, if you go to the dentist, what one anesthetic may work for one person doesn't for another. So it's, the receptors. It's how your body's, wired And so fortunately, the herbs seem to have a broad spectrum of receptors they can read and function with. Well, no, tonics go back, Al, Melanie, to the Greeks. Hippocrates wrote about herbal tonics as part of the traditional Greek medicine, and both he and Galen felt that the nutrition in your tonics was superior to therapeutic intervention. So if they were alive today, they would say something like this: tonics build strength, vitality, and health, and are therefore superior, and therapeutic agents that influence body function would be an average, and then toxic drugs would be inferior. That's how they would probably rate it. Now, aside from all what medicine offers, you know, and medicine does have some life-saving trauma treatments, they still have trouble with, you know, preventing disease and curing disease. So one may ask, how did medicine lose sight of the traditional holistic, vitalistic priority? And why did medicine abandon supporting and building up the human system in order for it to acquire a natural resistance in lieu of stronger drugs and evasive surgery? Well, the ancient Greeks actually can answer that for us, Al, Melody. Greek physicians were known for their superb ability to teach people how to care for themselves, to the point that the population was so healthy that Greek doctors were out of a job.
Yep.
So the Greeks always treated the person and not the disease. So that's why the Greek physicians, they had such a superior reputation in the healing arts that they were usually the first professionals that were taken into captivity alive so they could heal the invading army. So inorganic mineral drugs, toxic mercury, and the misuse of a lot of botanicals were basically adopted by medicine to offer us what we have today, which is, I think, more of an illusion of health. So I think patented greed of man is in the mix there and has led to what we have today. And medicine's drug therapies really turn people, I think, into drug addicts or slaves to their drugs and may even put them in early graves. So I think more people die from drugs than they do war. I just think it's criminal, but that's my opinion.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and you're not talking just about illegal drugs. You're talking about prescribed drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, I don't know. I think I've seen a study that the average senior citizen, mature individual, is taking half a dozen different prescribed drugs. You have to wonder, and everybody does, thinks about it, what kind of conflict develops with these prescribed drugs. If I'm taking more than one variety of prescribed drugs, you know, there's a possibility for conflict that's actually going to cause me to wind up taking a third drug or a fourth drug to compensate for whatever happened. Are there any conflicts from your tonics?
Not so much the tonics. I would say that, you know, vinegar usually is the choice of catalyst because it's really strong at pulling out the alkaloids, the photonutrients from the plant. Sometimes you can use alcohol with the vinegar if you have a plant that has a lot of alkaloids in it. Glycerin, not so strong. You're going to miss some of those photonutrients and those buffer alkaloids that you need. But on average, if you get a good tonic, it improves the neutralization of infection and also helps your antibodies, your killer T cells, function. It speeds the removal of pathogen debris. It assists your immune system to function better, such with fever and flushing out pathogens. It reduces phlegm and mucus, improves sleep, and gives you more strength and stamina, improves circulation, and just overall speeds healing. So that's why, down through the centuries, people have used tonics on a fairly consistent level. And this is why the FDA doesn't want you to have them, basically. Tonics, we're not supposed to use those.
Do you have any tonics available for sale?
We have one. It's very broad spectrum. It's called All-in-One. It's also a formula in our pandemic kit. It gets viruses, bacteria, fungus, parasites. It's just really broad spectrum. It's nice. It also is good for congestion and phlegm, head cold kind of stuff. So it's just really a very – five fresh herbs go in that formula, and then it's aged and cold pressed. So it's really – an interesting blend. It's what they used to call a plague tonic, to be honest.
All right. Why don't you give us some contact information? And for anyone who's looking for a good tonic, give Wendy Wilson a call.
Absolutely. They can give us a call toll-free at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or visit us on the web at thepowerherbs.com. Thanks, guys. See you next week.
All right, Wendy. Thank you. Talk to you next week. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Give her a call. Wendy, Melody and I will be right back. We're going to take a couple of commercials, and we will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. And it does look like you may be needing a little bit more in the near future. What's next, Melody?
365 days.
365 days?
Mm-hmm. Until we get rid of Obama.
See? Good news.
Good news. Yeah, see, we look long and large for good news. Yes.
The silver lining. You understand? Yes. It's an ill wind that blows no good, and we have I don't know, markets that are giving us trouble in one thing or another, but there is cause for celebration.
You know, it just surprises me how out of the mouths of people that even, that you know, they voted for them, and they're saying the same thing. Oh, man, another year. Only a year. He's soon gone. You know, they can't wait till he's gone because everybody understands exactly the damage that he has done to this country. And he's calling for longer unemployment insurance, Al.
Yep, that's right. There's something. There's a cause for optimism, huh? Boy, the economy is really doing well. President Obama's calling for longer unemployment insurance. Yeah. Hooray. Actually, it's not necessarily, it's not terrible news. He's according to ABC, calls for longer unemployment insurance. He wants to double it for North Carolina. It's not a nationwide situation, but it's, so far as I know, it's not nationwide. But nevertheless, it's one of those things where...
Well, if the economy was so strong and it's getting better and all these jobs have been created, why would you need to double unemployment insurance? I don't care what state it's in.
Well, maybe they just haven't created all those jobs in North Carolina.
Mm.
See, they created them all in Chicago. Mm. Maybe that's where they had the 240,000 jobs created in December. In any case, President Obama wants to double unemployment insurance for North Carolina.
It'll be interesting to see what consumer confidence reads this week. That comes out later in the week. So it'll be interesting to see if they still have those numbers are reporting from the holiday hangovers or if it has, it'll be interesting to see.
I don't know when they're going to get their next revisions of the last numbers. That's always something to look forward to. Nobody pays much attention to it. kind of an old joke, and nobody laughs at it much anymore. We don't pay much attention, but they will revise when they claim 242,000 or thereabouts for December. There's going to be a revision, and maybe even another revision after that one, and we may eventually find out what the true numbers are, but
for the job report, yeah,
not timely. We may know the true numbers for the December jobs increase. Might come in by the time we have Easter. Right? We may know what happened for Christmas about Easter, and then we'll find out what happened for Easter. We will know, who knows, late summer, early fall.
Well, we had oil again, we mentioned prior to in the first segment, hit some new lows and crashed. And certainly, I believe it slid more than 25%.
Yeah, 25% so far this year.
2 weeks.
This year, not in the last year.
This year.
We're 2.5 weeks now, thereabouts. But regardless, I mean, that's just astonishing. And it just, it kind of snuck up on $30 a barrel, and then it just blew right through it. I thought that level would hold. It would at least provide some resistance. No, it didn't hardly slow them. I just blew right through it and down. I don't know, what is it today, Melody? Is it down below 27 or not?
Weren't you listening when I gave the market report?
Yes, I was listening, but that doesn't mean I was remembering. Yes, $26.76, according to what I'm looking at right now. It's down below $27 a barrel. I mean, this is just astonishing. Imagine whatever it is you do for a living. And imagine that the homes that you used to sell for $105,000 last 18 months ago, you're now selling them for $26,000. I mean, this is devastating. It's just destroying the industry. And the problem they have is that the oil-producing nations are desperate to continue to acquire revenue from the sale of oil. It's what their economies depend on, and it's what their people depend on. And if they don't come up with the money, some of these nations are going to burst into flames. There are going to be riots and revolutions, and you know, who knows what's going to happen to the political leaders.
Look what's happening in Venezuela.
Well, I understand.
I mean, they're just
And because they are desperate, they can't work together. You know, this is a man-made phenomena to a large extent. All they have to do is just agree that instead of pumping 100,000 barrels of oil, we'll cut production by 30% and only pump 70,000 barrels of oil. Huh? And proportionally, for all of the oil-producing nations. Cut back on production, price goes back up. The supply goes down, price goes back up. They can't get an agreement on that right now because people are desperate and they don't dare cut the sale of crude oil. And because of that, it just pushes the price further and further down. And you've got Iran coming online now. They claim they're going to double their oil production increase by 500,000 barrels a day now that they are the economic sanctions and embargoes are lifted. I mean, it's a terrible time. Well, it's certainly an exciting time, but it's probably a terrible time for anybody in the oil business. This will shake out a lot of people whose corporations or nations were not adequately run, prepared, organized, whatever, and depending on oil, they're going to be. A lot of them are going to just sort of, they won't disappear exactly, but they're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Well, I saw a report today where China, and you know, you could stem this towards the price of oil, where the BRIC nations, remember them? I remember when all these emerging markets and the BRICS got together and they were tagged the BRIC nations and the World Bank that they were creating that's kind of on hold. Do you think when these countries, if they ever figure out what was who is behind, what country is behind this? If the, you know, supposedly reports in the beginning were, well, you know, the Saudis did it in conjunction with the United States in order to hurt Russia.
Yeah, that was one argument. But there was another argument that Saudis were doing it in order to get to stop the American oil shale and
right.
fracking industry. That was another excuse. I don't know which one was true, but this thing got out of control.
But my question is, if there is, I mean, you have these countries that are just being, you know, thrown into the abyss because of this.
Yeah.
Is that sort of like an act of war? I mean, could any one of these countries retaliate once they say, like,
how would they retaliate? Who would they retaliate against?
Well, that's just it. I mean, their ability to retaliate, but you get a bunch of the countries going together and creating sort of
it's more like a terrorist sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, the target, if there's going to be retaliation, there have to be people that are just angry at Saudi Arabia. Because Saudi Arabia ultimately was the spark plug that got this price decline going. And for whatever reason it was, they're the ones that masterminded this, and they are certainly one of the top three oil producers right now. There's a debate. You listen to different sources. Some people say it's Russia. Some people say it's the United States. Some people say it's Saudi Arabia. And you can get, you know, which one is number one? They're not. They're all the top three, and they're all similar in productive capacity. But Saudis are the ones, in their own way, the Saudis right now are probably as despised as the Jews. Israel, all right? They're in a constant state of antagonism with almost everybody. Saudi Arabia is in a situation very much analogous to that of Israel. I mean, there are a lot of people, even the Muslims, I don't know, are the Saudis Sunnis or Shiites? Do you know, Melody? I don't recall. But regardless, they are not only despised by the other sect of the Muslim faith, they're even despised by members of their own sect, just because they are arrogant in their wealth and their, their fabulous wealth that they've had in the past. It inspires a lot of public, it inspires a lot of jealousy and secret animosity. And although a lot of people say they throw great parties, you know, still there's something offensive about having all of that wealth and living in such extraordinary luxury, while other people in the Middle East are living in abject poverty. So my point is, there's a lot of people who would like to get Saudi Arabia. And they'd like to inflict, you SOBs, you did this, that, or the other to us. You didn't help us when you could. You flaunted your wealth, blah, blah, blah. And there'd be a lot of people, including nations, whose revenue stream is being disrupted. They'd like to get them. It wouldn't be all that hard. It doesn't require, I suspect, it doesn't require an army to march on Saudi Arabia. It requires people who have some powerful weapons and a little bit of intelligence to march on oil fields, which are spread out. They can't be highly defended just because they cover a large distance. It should be possible for a relatively small band of individuals to sneak in with some bombs, some C4, maybe even nuclear, backpack nuclear weapons, and strike at Saudi Arabia. Is this going to happen? I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but I think there's a good chance that it'll happen because there's a lot of nations, oil-producing nations, that are angry at Saudi Arabia. Russia's angry at Saudi Arabia. They won't attack directly, I know that, but I certainly don't expect them to. But I wouldn't put it past Putin or whoever to provide a certain amount of support for any proxy, find some other nation that was willing, some other nation, government, whatever, willing to attack Saudi Arabia. I wouldn't be surprised if Putin was willing to provide some support. I don't know. I think this is a bad time to be in Saudi Arabia. I think if you're going to stay there for the whole year, you're going to see some very difficult times. Maybe even some serious violence before this year is out, but we'll watch and see.
What I don't get, Al, is, you know, they say they're not cutting back due to market share. They're trying to grow their market. But to a point, it's like, what good is an extra market share? I mean, it comes to the point where
you're giving it away for nothing anyway.
And it's just like, so
Saudis are trying to route the competition. They have their own claims and rest of it. I don't doubt that they're trying to run a number of oil-producing nations out of the business, because the Saudis can still produce oil at a profit at a very low price.
They can produce it, but their bills, their debt.
No, I understand.
I mean,
but they're still solvent, and they may be playing, you know, just hardball business, and they're just saying, we're going to run the rest of these little guys out. They're going to collapse. And we'll still be able to make a profit. Yeah, it's going to be strained. We won't have as much money as we had. We'll have to, you know, tighten our belts a little bit, tighten our diamond-studded belts.
Usually a situation like that, usually it always backfires.
Well, it kind of has.
Yeah, backfires, and it's not successful.
But now we're in a situation where who can quit? All of the oil-producing nations are locked up in a game of chicken. All right? To see who can endure the lowest prices, and because they're all desperate to keep the revenue coming in, nobody can quit the game. It's kind of, I mean, it's tragic on one level. It's comedy on another level.
No.
Because this is a man-made situation. This isn't a function of, oh, gee, you know, this is, they started this, and now they've got it, and I hope they like it, and where's it going to end? And not only where is it going to end, when is it going to end? I mean, you can only go so far before, you know, you can't go any further. The price can't fall any further. But as you said earlier, it's going to go down and break 20 before this is all over. And there have been predictions it could go to 10.
But where should the real price of oil be? Maybe the run-up in oil, maybe that was, you know, the
You know, they enjoyed it. They enjoyed it, but they ran it up.
Maybe the run-up wasn't the true supply and demand.
Oh, I agree.
Right.
I'm sure it
maybe
was.
The true supply is supposed to be supply and demand is right here at the level that we're at.
It's hard to say. You know, a lot of people, some people think that the reason we had the big run-up and oil went over $100 a barrel had to do with the Federal Reserve and quantitative easing. They pumped so much money into the system that it wound up inflating. It not only supported the market, kept the Dow Jones at record high levels, it may have even supported and stimulated the price of crude oil. Now that back off, the prices go down.
Oil started to move up after when Bush went into Iraq. That's when we started seeing the move up in oil, which, you know, it all made sense. And so that was the beginning of it, and then it just continued to go up. And I hear music for the break.
That means we have probably talked a little bit too long here, Melody.
Let's go.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, we got, you know, everybody's pointing to the finger to China. You know, we talk about, you know, is it really China? But the headlines is China just sent Europe into a bear market. Is the U.S. next? And, of course, you know, Chinese government continues to manipulate its currencies, and many are pointing to this as cause for a global panic. China has pushed several countries into a bear market, their stock markets into bear market territory. You have Canada, Germany, France, the UK, Japan. These are just some of the global markets that are now in bear market status. And you also have a handful of other countries that are basically now in a correction with the U.S., both the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ, Switzerland, Australia, Russia, India. So we're certainly looking at this as something that is filtering down. And oftentimes we use the Baltic Dry bulk index to kind of as a proxy for global trade. Prior to the 2008 financial crisis, it was standing at 11,000 points. Today, it closed at 358, and the index has hit fresh record lows every day since the beginning of this year. And we have a caller, so let's go to the caller, and then we can get back to this article, Al, if you'd like.
Jim from Ohio.
Yes, sir. Hello, Melanie.
Jim.
Hello, Al.
Hi, Jim.
How you doing?
I have a question. I'd listen to you every day on 7.490 on shortwave.
Right.
And this oil scenario, I wonder what this is doing to the taxes. It's got to be cratering the tax situation because of the interstates and all the money that they use for the gasoline taxes, et cetera,
yeah.
unless those taxes are kept healthy and oil is really, the gas at the pump is really lower because maybe the taxes are not being discounted fractionally or exponentially as the oil goes down. What do you think?
Well, I think the taxes are proportional. I'm guessing that. I don't know that there's a flat tax, and there may be. There might be 25 cents a gallon no matter what the price of it is, but I'm inclined to think most of those taxes are a percentage. Pretty much has to be that way. And therefore, the government and the taxing authorities are losing money on the falling price of gasoline. Right? They can't be happy about this.
And what about those who hold the debt on these drillers that thought, you know, when oil was at $100 or $90 a barrel, the loans that are out there on the frackers and all the other things, these guys got to be, these fields, these oil fields and all this paraphernalia, it's got to be going back to those who hold the debt, hold the loans.
Well, I agree. And a lot of those people, it's called junk bonds in the first place, because when you lend money to oil drillers, there's always an element of risk in there. Right, and more risk than if you had, in theory, U.S. treasuries or safer forms. They call them junk bonds for that reason. They're high-risk bonds, high-interest bonds. All right, they're supposed to be able to pay these bonds back. The way the system operates is, and when they're going to put in a new well, they put out bonds to get borrow money to drill the well. They're not working on the profits they've previously made. These oil wells are supported by bonds. They're going to have to pay them back. It's more evidence. I don't know how much that same system applies to oil wells around the world, but it does in this country. Well, it puts the people who are fracking in a very difficult position. The price of oil, they were borrowing money on the premise that the price of oil was going to stay in the neighborhood of $100 a barrel. And here it is down closer to $25 a barrel. Well, that means they can't pay those loans off. In many instances, they won't be able to pay the loans unless they get out there and produce more oil. Got to produce more oil. Got to produce more. The threat of the bonds and not being able to pay the bonds and being driven into bankruptcy is forcing some of these people to produce more oil at a time when we're already overwhelmed by the supply. They can't quit the game, right? Again, this is like a game of chicken. You got these oil producers are coming at each other head on, and they can't quit the game, even though somebody's going to die, figuratively speaking. We've lost, according to one source, 195,000 jobs last year in the oil business. We'll see more. And corporations are going to be pushed into bankruptcy, and maybe nations into economic and political turmoil, chaos, revolution. We'll watch and see. And the great irony in all of this is no one can seem to just quit. Huh? So
yes.
Where is this going to stop? Nobody knows.
I have another question. Melody, is that you that sings that song at the end of your broadcast?
No, I sell gold and silver. I'm not a singer.
I know, but it sounds like you.
Well, thank you. That's a good. She has a nice voice. Thank
yeah,
you.
Well, it sounds like you. And Al, I like the way you sing, and you sing it. And I love the tirade you have. I can just see Melody just kind of squinching down, like wondering what you're going to say.
She cringes, and she communicates that without even saying any. She doesn't even make any sound. You can just hear her cringing. She's the only person on radio who can communicate a cringe without making any sound.
I agree. I can just see it happening because she even made a remark today about one of the words you used or something. And I thought
that was yesterday that she was commenting, claiming one of the words I used was a swear word.
Yeah. Well, I'll put up 25. If you got to put a dollar in a jar for every one you use, I'll send $25.
Well, you'll have to talk to Melody about that. If you want to send Melody $25, that's all right with me. Melody probably would want. She would think that's an encouragement. That wouldn't be 25 representing words used in the past. That would be 25 for future words. That means I would have look, I've got how many more dollars do I have in the jar, Melody?
No, it would be past, and it would far surpass the $25. But anyway, Jim, thank you for your call.
I enjoy your program. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling. We appreciate it very much.
Bye.
Thank you, Jim. All right, let's see. What else have we got, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to finish up on some of these numbers. We do have the forum going on in Davos, Switzerland this week, and there was a chairman and chief executive of an international shipping firm, the Libra Group, and he described the situation in China as Armageddon level.
Yeah.
He said things have just stopped in China. And the shipping industry, they're having to unload a lot of their vessels. They have to offload their vessels at bargain basement prices. And what I found interesting about this little report is a lot of these same firms, the ones that are unloading their vessels at bargain basement prices, they were bulking up just a few years ago. They were confident that, there was no new global crisis that was going to face them. So they bought into these government reports that things are just going fine and dandy, because why else would they expand in 2013 and 14? They never thought that they would buy ships in 2013 and 2014 and find themselves in this type of a situation right now. So they're unloading these.
What do you think was the foundation of their mistake? They made a miscalculation on how much business was going on the trajectory of business globally and whatever. They made a big mistake. Why do you think that happened?
Well, I'm not a shipper.
It has more to do with shipping. This is something that people were convinced that everything was running ahead faster and faster and faster, and there was big money to be made, and you better jump in with both feet and get in there and get yours. And that's what they did. And it turns out the system, I think they did it operating on the presumption that central banks like the Federal Reserve really had the whole system pretty much under control.
That's
and they
what
were going to
they bought into the government reports.
Yeah. Yes. And they bought this, and all of a sudden we find out, people we thought were in control really don't have that level of control. There are things happening here that are beyond their control, beyond their understanding, and all of a sudden we really do see a domino effect here. It's evidence that an economy is not simply like a chain, where we just go from one link to the next, to the next, to the next. It's more like a fabric. And if it tears in any direction, all of a sudden, the whole thing can fall apart. It's evidence that the economy is fragile and that it will always be fragile. And part of the reason for that is there are so many smart people that have figured out how to make the economy more and more efficient, that when we become more efficient, we lose our margin for error. And it's great. We say, we can stretch this a little bit more. We can squeeze an extra nickel a ton out of whatever. But there's a point in time when finally you take the last nickel that the ton will support, and next thing you know, the price of a particular commodity is falling. Well, it's no big deal. And then another one does, and then another one. And all of a sudden, you have a kind of avalanche on your hands, and we're seeing evidence that supports that, you know, that metaphor. Is it really an avalanche we're looking at just yet in the markets? Not necessarily. Right? But another week or so of this, and panic may be a rational reaction. I don't think anybody's panicking yet. It's not many people. Americans are a little bit blasé about the whole thing, in part because I think we've come to count on the Federal Reserve. They'll jack the thing back up. People in a position to know what's going on, they say, the Federal Reserve will put more money into it. They'll push the markets back up. Maybe not. Maybe that's not going to happen. We've been spoiled for the last, 10, 15, 20 years by manipulation of markets that have all but guaranteed you could make a profit if you went into the stock markets. Precisely because they were guaranteed to go up and then up and then up and then up. And maybe once that guarantee is extinguished, now what? Now maybe they're going to go down and down. And it's like oil. Where's it going? You know, $10 a barrel? Some people say, yeah, $20 a barrel looks likely. How far can it go, and how much damage is it going to do? And we certainly are living in interesting times. We are living in potentially dangerous times, and we'll watch and see. Can they, you know, we'll know better in the next week or two. Can they bring this thing to a halt and stop the fall, or are these markets going to drop couple thousand more points, or are they pretty much as low as they're going to go right now? The evidence suggests, because it's global, it indicates that the problem is systemic, right? There is a fundamental problem, and it's probably too much debt, either that and or the fiat monetary system. But something appears to be breaking. Watch and see. It's not broken yet. But it appears to be breaking, and we're going to have to watch close. And if you agree with that assessment, you know, now's a good time. Get yourself some gold and silver, because if this goes down, we may be the last ones to fall in this country, and we may not fall as far as other countries are going to collapse and crash. We may get by better. It may be more profitable or tolerable to live here than in other countries, but there's still going to be a problem, and there's a high probability that the dollar is going to suffer before this is done. And if it does, you're going to want a monetary metal, and the number one monetary metal in the world is gold. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. I want to thank all of you for listening. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, money.